I have a younger brother, 2 years younger than me. I'm 70, so do the math. My younger brother's name is Fernando. And Fernando is always teasing me because of a particular trait that I have. And that he says to me, "Mario, I asked you what time it was. I did not ask you for the history of the development of the clock." That is a particular fault of mine. I tend to say, "Well, what about this? And then what about that?" It's kind of like seeing an iceberg, you know? You see the tip of it and you know there's a whole lot of it underneath. So giving that, I will try to keep my history of the development of the clock in check a little bit, but I have to tell you some things. Because what I want to talk about is the first reading. Because the first reading, and related to the gospel reading, if you don't get what's going on, it can really be confusing. So allow me just to... I want to read it again because I want to refresh your memory on what this is all about. Because it's kind of weird. Unless you understand the Jewish mind, this is basically maybe, I would say 800 to 1,000 years before Jesus. So it's probably about 3,000 years ago. So the very first thing I want you to understand is when you hear the word Amalek, Amalek is a tribe of pagan people that were fairly warlike, and they were the mortal enemies of the Jewish people. When Moses brings the people out of Egypt, the reason they wandered in the desert for 40 years is because of the Amaleks. You see, the Amaleks controlled a lot of the area where the promised land was. And so every time that the Jews would get close to the promised land, the Amaleks would come and make war on them. And so they wandered for 40 years in the desert. It doesn't take 40 years to go from Egypt to the promised land. Just look at it on the map. It's not that long. However, the problem was the Amaleks. So, in that context, listen to this. In those days, Amalek came and waged war against Israel. Moses therefore said to Joshua, "Pick out certain men and tomorrow go out and engage Amalek in battle. I will be standing on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses told him. He engaged Amalek in battle. After Moses had climbed to the top of the hill with Aaron and Hur. As long as Moses kept his hands raised up like this, Israel had the better of the fight. But when he let his hands rest downward, Amalek had the better of the fight. Moses' hands, however, grew tired. And so they put a rock in place so Moses could sit. And meanwhile, Aaron and Hur supported his hands up. On one side one, and on the other side the other. So that his hands remained steady till sunset. And Joshua mowed down Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Now, let's deal with one thing at a time. For a long time, I have always been troubled. Can you get me the microphone? That microphone, it's a little easier to talk. Uh, for a long time, I had always been troubled by some of the violence in the Old Testament. And you ask yourself, what do you mean? Is God involved in violence? I think that that's something you have to ask yourself. And the question then becomes, first and foremost, is violence ever sanctioned by God? Ever? Because that's a basic question. And the question is, if you say that violence is never sanctioned by God at all, then you have to go the route of pacifism. Now, if you go the route of pacifism, that's fine for you. But there's a problem. You see, the problem is this. You can never call the police. You know why? Because when you call the police, all you're doing is delegating the violence to somebody else. Because they come with guns. And so all you're saying is, I'm not going to do it. Let the police do it. Now then the question then becomes, does it ever become necessary for man or woman to use violence? And the answer, if you don't want to go the route of pacifism, the answer becomes, regrettably, yes. Yes. Now, why is that? Let me go further, a little bit further, deeper. The reason, if you remember, that at the very beginning of creation, and please understand, we do not know why this, that the scientific facts or the historical facts of this, but Adam and Eve, which is a parable, it's not real people. It's Adam and Eve. Adam means humankind. And Eve means mother of the living. So it's like Joe Blow and Miss Joe Blow. Okay? Sort of that. But it still teaches a truth. It's a story, but it tells you a truth. When they disconnect with God, and that's what original sin is. Original sin is not a sin you committed. It's basically humanity's disconnect from the original purpose that God had for humanity. And by the way, parenthetical, the word religion comes from re, again, and legion, to connect. Religion means to reconnect. Okay? So, when human beings are disconnected from God, you see the very first act of violence, and that is Cain and Abel. You see the very first act of violence. So the question becomes, is violence ever necessary in order to resist evil against yourself or against another? Is it ever necessary? And the answer is, regrettably, yes. That's why we have police. That's why the state has the power to enforce. Listen to the word. To use force. A great theologian that I respect highly, Richard Neuhaus, he's passed away now, said it this way, and I like it. He said it this way. Violence, when necessary, is not an option, but a sad duty. Violence, when necessary, is not an option, but a sad duty. If violence is necessary, it is necessary to protect sometimes. Now, please understand, you can give your life. Remember, Jesus himself allowed himself to be acted upon extremely violently. with the crucifixion. But remember, Jesus' life was not taken. And Jesus himself says it. He said, if I wanted to, I could have legions of angels coming to defend me. And he said, no one takes my life. I lay it down willingly. And so the very first thing that we have to understand is that every Christian has the option of non-violence when it comes to yourself. You have the option of self-sacrifice. You don't have the option of sacrificing another for the sake of not using violence. Example, if you see someone assaulting a little child or an older person or say anybody who's being beaten up, you have a duty to pull them off, which is not exactly not using force. And if it becomes necessary, you have a duty to use violence or lethal force, because you don't have a right to sacrifice another human being. Sacrifice yourself. Now, pull that up from the individual relationship of one person beating up another and defense, self-defense and stuff like that. Pull it up all the way to nations. Does a nation have a right and a duty to defend itself and or to defend someone who is running over for evil purposes another? Let me give you the typical example of World War II. In World War II, did the Allies have a right and a duty to resist Nazi Germany, Japan, and the Axis powers? And the answer is yes. They had not only a right, they had a duty. Because the state has the power to use force in order to bring about peace. That is what's called in the Catholic tradition, it's called the just war theory. The just war theory always says that violence, when necessary, is not an option, but a sad underlying duty. Now that I've described the iceberg, check out the first reading. The first reading is that Amalek is fighting against Israel. And Amalek is trying to mow down Israel. And Moses says to Joshua, go and engage the Amaleks. And I will go to the top of the hill, and I will stand with the staff of the Lord. And so it seems to happen exactly that way. But here's the kicker of why this is in the Bible. You see, God, throughout the Bible, wants to communicate that Israel is not the source of its own strength. That Israel is the subject of God's protection. Who liberated Israel from the slavery in Egypt? It wasn't the strength of the Israelis. It was the power of God acting through Moses. And as soon as God begins to liberate his people through his acts against Pharaoh, then what happens is Pharaoh begins coming back at Israel, and it's once again God showing himself that he is not disengaged from historical circumstances when it involves good against evil. Do I, and does the church and the Jews, believe that it was God who actually helped the Israelites escape? Yes, because he is not mute and he is not unengaged when it comes to historical struggles. When it comes to, not all the time, because he doesn't defeat everything that happens that's evil. Witness the resurrection, the crucifixion. But he does give the strength for ultimately for good to prevail. For good to prevail. If you look at historical process, the forces of evil have never had the ability to be able to prevail for very long. Because sooner or later, the forces of evil are destroyed by time or by God's strength. Okay, now, what happens here? This is very interesting. When Moses gets to the top, as long as he's got his arms up in prayer, the Bible says Israel had the better. But the moment Moses might have thought, okay, they're winning, okay, time to drop my hands, all of a sudden, Israel begins losing. What's the message? The message is, it isn't Israel who's winning this. It is the power of God used through Israel that is defeating the enemies. Now, the point is, then you move to the New Testament. And then you have this unjust judge who is denied, this little widow, somebody's accusing her of something. And she keeps pounding and pounding and pounding. And it's interesting because the commentary says that he changes his mind to give a just verdict because in the literal sense, the judge says, I am afraid she's going to give me, and the Hebrew word says, a black eye. Okay? She's a little violent little widow. Okay? And so he's not wanting to get a black eye. So, the issue is, Jesus is saying, look, if an unjust judge is going to give justice, how much more is God, who is just, going to give justice? And now that doesn't mean that he's going to stop every evil. Because if you're thinking that, you're going to be waiting a long time. Okay? Because even God himself allowed his son to be crucified. But what is the point at which at which God's justice wins? The resurrection. The resurrection basically says, even if an act of evil come to the point of taking life, that will not stand because the power of evil cannot win over the power of God, who is life itself. And what Jesus is saying by the parable of this unjust judge and this little old lady who keeps pounding at the door, he's basically saying, first of all, don't ever give up. Don't ever give up. Even to the point that you get crucified, don't give up. Because the power of God, nothing can overcome the power of God. And then the second thing is, you can't, in the same way Moses was had to keep his hands up, basically God is saying to us, if you want to overcome whatever evil is asserting itself over you, you got to keep connected with God. Because it's not you who's doing it. It's the power of God in you. If you remember, just one last example, one of my favorites, when Jesus meets Peter and the disciples on the boat and he's walking on the water, and there's a humongous storm, and they think they're going to sink. Moses said, Lord, if it is you, bid me to come to you. And Jesus says, come. Peter gets out of the boat and begins walking on the water. As long as his eyes were peeled on Jesus, when does he begin to sink? When he takes his eyes and puts them on the strength of the storm and counts on his own strength to keep on walking on the water. The lesson throughout all of this, no matter what happens to you, don't give up and stay connected to God. That's the lesson on those readings. Evil, meaning whatever kind of violence, whether the violence is something from outside or something from inside, whether it be you get assaulted or a car accident or you have a heart disease or cancer, whatever it is, something is ultimately going to assault each and every one of us. We're all going to die. Okay? And so we're going to be assaulted by evil sooner or later. The question is, can you stand up to it? And the answer is, yes. If you are still connected to God, which is the whole notion of the arms upraised, and if you constantly keep your eyes and don't give up. That's it.